This is Clay Kane. Welcome to The Hub. Well, I have a little game that I wanted to play, but all three of us have to be engaged, so maybe we can save that for the next episode. But let's intro folks, right? Because what I love about you, Yvette, is that you really are a self-proclaimed like nerd, right? You love nerd culture.
Yes.
When I interviewed you before, you talked about that.
Yeah.
So what was the moment that you really fell in love with The Walking Dead?
You know what's funny? I'm glad you said that I'm a self-proclaimed nerd and not a self-proclaimed super fan, because I've never liked that title. I know that I'm not, and I know that once you say that you're super or you're superior to another person, then everyone's like, but I love it too. You could be that. You be the super fan. I'm just a regular fan. I fell in love with The Walking Dead. I remember the first episode, and to this day, I don't remember if the episode was in black and white or just my memory of it was in black and white, or a poster I saw, but I saw an image of Andrew Lincoln on the horse, all in black and white, and then the horde of walkers in downtown Atlanta. And I was like, I don't know what this is, but I'm sold. And from that moment on, I watched from the very beginning. I didn't read the comics. I still don't read the comics. I started to read because a friend of mine, CM Punk, who I did Talking Dead with originally, he realized I wasn't reading the graphic novel, so he sent me the compendium. So I had like the first 10. So I read up to Alexandria, and then when it started to match up with the show, I'm like, let me tap out. There's just something magical about the idea of who you become when everything falls apart. And finding out, thinking that you're the hero of the story and finding out that you're not. That part to me is just so deep to me, because we all, if you were to ask anyone, who are you? If everything went away, who would you be? Well, I'd be the hero. I'd be the one. I'd be grabbing, right?
Right.
But when you watch The Walking Dead, you realize that sometimes the hero is the person you wouldn't expect. And sometimes the villain is, you're like, he's the villain?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I love about it. What about you?
So me, I watched it from the very beginning, but I watched it kind of on and off. I skipped the season with the...
I judge you for this.
I know.
Tell them what you did, and I'm going to tell them why.
It was the farmhouse season.
Don't give a spoiler, though.
When they were in a farm for a long time, I said, I'm not into this. But I think it was season 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
I really fell in love when I saw Michonne.
Yeah.
Walk through that field and walk to the prison.
Yeah, that was season 3, I believe.
I said, what is this?
She's carrying the baby food.
And I had never seen, first of all, just to see a black woman character in that way, and I fell in love with her as an, I always say her name wrong.
Denai Guerrera.
Mm-hmm. She was just, the energy, the look in her eyes, she had the long locks, like just the power in her. I said, I will watch this show as long as she's on it. That was my commitment.
And thankfully, she's been on ever since.
If she's out, I'm out.
The reason that I judge you, and I don't judge you, I judge you a little bit, is when I tell people about who want to start The Walking Dead, I tell them to make sure they live through season 2 at the farm.
Yeah.
There's the farm, as it's written, it's very slow. It's plotting. It makes you want to escape the show, right? If you don't decide, I'm going to take the ride. I tell everyone, if you make it to the end of that season, there is such an amazing surprise that it makes you go, I will watch the show for the rest of my life. You played yourself.
I did.
You didn't want to take the ride.
Go back to the farm.
Right. So don't say what was revealed, but I just think that those that watch, you got
to
make it through the farm.
I have to go.
And also making it through the farm prepares you for the rest of the season, because I think of The Walking Dead as an entire piece. It's not, you can't judge it season by season, because there are some seasons that are deliberatively, that's a rough word, I chose it anyway, slow, because they're building a character arc, or they're trying to come to an understanding of who someone is, and they'll take their time. And so season 2 prepares you for that.
Yeah.
So you're ready for a season where they do all-out war for 2 seasons and everything's about Negan. You can survive it because you live through the farm. The farm is when we meet Herschel. God rest his soul. Scott Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sweet, sweet, sweet man. Yeah. Just like two days ago.
76 years old, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask. So for all of us here, right, which Walking Dead character do you think you are? Like, who's the one? And we can't say Rick. We just can't say Rick. Like, outside of the head guy, which Walking Dead character
I think
are
I'm
you?
Sasha, Sonequa Martin-Green's character.
I see that.
Yeah, because she's the unexpected hero. She's stronger than you think. She's stronger than she thinks. We can see it on her, but she doesn't see it. But every time she needed to show up, she showed up. And she also had her heart was still open in the midst of everything. She loses her brother. She's dealing with death all around her. And she still believes, and she finds love. And like she's in it. it's hell all around her, but she stays in it to the very end and ultimately makes a huge sacrifice for everyone's good.
What about you, Karen?
I don't think I represented at all on Walking Dead. You know, the closest to me is post-apocalyptic after she came into herself, Carol.
Yeah.
Closest to me, like, we'll do whatever needs to be done, yeah. Whatever it needs to be done, no matter whose feelings may be hurt.
Yeah, this podcast proves that. That is 100% Carol. I don't know how I got here,
Clay. Very practical and methodical. Yeah. We'll slice your head off if it needs be. Open to love.
Yeah.
Even if you're mad that she's picked the wrong man, and primarily because she has the baddest black man in the land right now.
Are you really sitting here talking about Karzekiel in front of me? Is that what's happening right now?
I'm sorry. I know you still
Here's
what's
going to
happen. Spoiler alert. Ezekiel eventually is going to die. Carol and Daryl are going to get together. Mm-hmm. After she, I haven't read any of the comic books, but I just think that that's going to happen.
Well, I mean, I feel like there's been a little bit of foreshadowing. Season 9 premiere, I felt like he's saying things that people usually say before they die.
Yeah,
on the Walking Dead anyway.
Or I'm the tiger.
You're Shiva?
I know you're going to say that. I know because you love that tiger. You love that. When that tiger passed away, you were done. I remember that. This sounds cheesy, but I think I would be ride or die Glenn.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think I'd be ride or die Glenn. Glenn was loyal. Yeah. Glenn was a leader, but kind of on the sidelines. Yeah. He was an original. You know, he was like season one. Yeah. He was helping out Rick. Like, I think I'd be ride or die Glenn, where you count him out for a minute, but he
always rises. And for the longest time, he was the only one that had never killed a person.
That's true. That's true.
He didn't kill anyone
true.
Until the Negan entered.
Yes.
And it broke him. And I think that was his superpower, and the thing that kept him alive was that he was that pure.
Yeah.
And then once he pierced that veil, I think it was destined
that
it was
Rick's fault?
I think it was Pride's fault. You know what I mean?
Because Rick reacted.
Yeah, I think that experience kind of broke Rick too in a lot of ways, because he was so cocky. And I remember, I love Andrew Lincoln. I love Rick Grimes. But I did not like Rick Grimes in that span of time. I felt like he was very willful. I felt that he was very careless in his decisions. And I felt that he was led by ego. And I know enough in life to know that when you are led by ego, you are destined to fall. May not be immediate, may not be in front of your enemies, but you are going to go down when you lead by ego.
No.
So I saw it.
Yeah.
I saw it coming and it happened, and Glenn was the casualty.
Such a graphic scene. You know, what's funny, like, I remember when I was a kid, there were certain shows that I really loved, right? And I watched them all the time. I didn't realize that there were young people who grew up on The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Like, I'm grown, so to me, like, watching it from 30 on really isn't. But there were folks who were like, you know, 8 years old watching that show.
You look at how young Chandler Riggs was when he started playing Carl, and he's going to college or college age now. So it's been, he started, I think, when he was 8 or 9.
But let me ask you this. Do you think something has changed story-wise? And what I mean is, at one point, it was funny. Every time a black character died, another black character showed up.
Right.
Like, what was the... Oh, the first bald-headed dude. What was his name?
Well, he's Irony Singleton in real life. He was...
Something.
I don't know why I'm blanking on his name, but it's Irony Singleton.
He died in the prison scene. Then they had, I forgot the guy who came after, T-Bone. I know, right?
It was something like that.
But then they had, like, 5 minutes later, here's the other black dude. But they stopped doing that. Like, I wonder, was that intentional? Because there was criticism online for that. Was that intentional for them to say, okay, let's not have the... Now it is truly, truly diverse.
Right.
But I just wonder if that was intentional.
Actually, I think The Walking Dead, the end, the people in the end, I think represent the way the world's probably going to end up. Because it is disproportionately, I think, people from the global majority.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's because when it comes to survival... Nobody survives better than black people.
Well, yeah, because we've been through so much.
If we weren't
hardy people, we wouldn't have survived slavery. The fact that we're even in America right now having a conversation shows the strength of black people.
Mm-hmm. In Oceania.
Enjoying delicious.
Across from the Rockefeller Center.
Delicious appetizers. We did not even order.
You want to eat that, Clay? Because that was delicious.
What is it?
You could take it.
A little bite of something.
There's a little bite here for those listening at Oceania. And they have food coming in now. All right, so let me ask you this. In what ways do we feel like The Walking Dead represents where we are now in a culture as far as the dystopian society that The Walking Dead represents? I feel like that's why it resonates so much, is because we're not in, you know, zombie land, whatever, but I feel like we are. Yeah, some people are lobotomized.
Yeah, they wear MAGA hats.
Right.
Out for themselves, just aimlessly walking around, taking what they can take.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that is what it is.
So in what ways do you feel like it shows itself in your life, Yvette? Is it on social media? In what ways are we meeting zombies, if you will?
If we look at what they are, they're decaying. They're dead and don't know it. They are constantly on the move seeking what they can devour. They are not a respecter of persons. They have a horde mentality. Loud sounds and bright flashes of light attract them, shiny objects attract them. They're easily distracted. They fall for tricks. All of this is happening right now. They wear red hats now instead of tattered clothes, but it is the same mentality. And just as they fight against it in the show, we need to fight against it at the ballot box. And all won't make it. You know, Heidi Heitkamp just got devoured by the horde, or may be devoured by the horde on November 6th. And it feels like, and there's been seasons of the Walking Dead. The governor season comes to mind. The Negan season comes to mind, where it feels like all is lost, right? Because right before the governor was defeated, he looked like he was gonna win, and it looked like there was no way we could get around it. But the group always found a way, and I think we as a nation will find a way. We as a nation have to find a way. We can't fall. We can't fall. And there's so many. The other thing is, you know, as Karen said this earlier, it looks like there's more of them, right? Because we only see our group, right? The world is vast, right? So if the zombie apocalypse happened and it looks like all of Atlanta is gone, that's just Atlanta. And now we have Fear the Walking Dead, so we've seen L.A. and maybe parts of Mexico. We don't know what's happening in Peoria.
Mm-hmm.
They might have a foothold in Peoria. It might be strong as what in Peoria. So we just need to find what the equivalent of that is in the Electoral College. And we need to make sure Peoria stands, and whatever the other versions of Peoria are that stand, so that as the horde advances, they don't win.
Clay said before that he's petrified of the time that we're living in. It's why he can't watch The Handmaid's Tale. Mm-hmm. There's also The Man in the High Castle. That's also pretty, mm-hmm. pretty daunting. The Purge.
The Purge.
There's a lot. You know, art always imitates life. Mm-hmm. We can't imagine things in reality that isn't existing. Right.
Right? You gotta see a kernel somewhere.
I've had this nightmare for most of my young life. I started at age 8 when I watched Playing for Time. Vanessa Redgrave, she played a musician during Nazi Germany who was half Jewish, right? But there was an orchestra mm-hmm. that they would play for the German soldiers. So it was Playing for Time. You were playing literally for your life.
To live longer.
And I saw that, I think I was 8 or 9 years old, and it devastated me. And then I think the next year was Roots, which also, the scene on the ship, I couldn't watch the rest of it. I got mm-hmm. sick. I couldn't go to school. Something in my spirit, it was like, this could happen again. Mm-hmm. This, as a kid, I understood this could happen again. I don't know why I didn't understand it all. And as I've grown older, I've studied all of these different, you know, I'm like an expert in Nazi Germany. I know everything, the rise of Hitler. I watch every documentary that comes on, even though I can't physically take it. I'm drawn to it because it's about inhumanity. It's the same theme that we're watching with The Walking Dead, Fear of the Walking Dead, The Purge. It's that level of, like, I don't see you as a person, and therefore I'll do whatever I want to your body, to your personhood. I'll destroy you. And I don't care about you. That disturbs me at my core. And I know it makes you scared.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to run, though. You can get your passport and you can have money in a farm bank and try to wait it out. But the reality is the disease, the infection, because that's
in all of us.
Yeah, it's there. And it can be anywhere. So my job, you know, I feel every day, and I'm optimistic as a human being, the glass is always half full, is like, can we change things, right? It's so easy to destroy. It's so easy to be horrible and evil. That's easy. You can knock down this whole building in a couple of hours with some dynamite. How long does it take to erect this structure with all of the facets and the wonderful? It takes years, right? But I'm willing to put the time in. My optimism is that I do think that there's more good people that just need to be awakened.
Yeah, you know what's deep too about the idea of the diseases in all of us? It only is activated when you die. So as long as you don't die. Mm. Now, our human body, we have no control over that. But if we're using the analogy and we just think of your spirit man, the part of you that is connected with God and knows what goodness is and knows the importance of shame, and you stay tethered to that truth, then you don't die and you don't become the walking dead. Right?
And you avoid the bites. Like a Trump. Yeah. Trump is a bite.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, that's a bite.
Yeah.
You know, the folks that you see out there, Laura Ingraham, Fox News, those are bites.
Tommy Lauren.
Right, Tommy Lauren. Those things that will get in you and infect you and infect your brain, and it's contagious. And, you have to avoid that toxicity.
Even if you want to take it even further, you know, with what Kanye's doing with the MAGA hat, Kanye's bit, but in a limb. Mm. So if we get to him and cut that limb off quick enough. We cut the limb off, the leg, the lower extremity off before, like they did Herschel when Herschel got bit. I mean, listen, it's possible, but I'm just saying, follow the analogy, not about Kanye. I think that then you can stop the poison from destroying him. He gonna limp though. He gonna need a cane. He's never going to be the same because he has been bit by that hateful virus, right? Or that.
I feel like he jumped into the zombies, though. I felt like he jumped in.
Because he felt invincible.
Right, and some folks said, we're going to try and pull you out. And that's the weird thing when you think about, you know, acts of forgiveness. And when somebody, like, you look at someone like, and I know this is context, but look at someone like Booker T. Washington, for example. This is context, of course. You know, we're talking about a very long time ago. Booker T. Washington literally said that we should concede being second-class citizens, we should be okay with that, and just do hard work and pull ourselves up by our bootstraps.
Yeah, there's been the mini Booker T's.
That's what I'm saying.
So I celebrate Booker T and W.E.B. Du Bois and Nanny Helen Burroughs, who's also fighting a good fight during that time. I mean, so let's think about it. Martin Luther King Jr. was hated by black people.
Yep.
I think 63% of black people thought he was doing harm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When he was doing...
Leave us be.
Right. And where did that come from? Because Booker T. Washington was where? Where was Tuskegee? In Alabama?
Yeah.
All right. So he built a school in the heart of Lynchville, in the heart of places where they would snatch... Emmett Till could get snatched out of his bed of a home that his mother trusted his family...
Yeah.
In a grown person's home, he got snatched out of bed at wee hours of the morning, and no one could do anything about it.
Right.
So when I think about Booker T. Washington, he was about survival. And if there weren't Booker T. Washington's, the numbers didn't meet our, you know, weren't in our favor.
Right.
If everybody was Malcolm X's daddy, if everybody was, you know, out there...
So you're saying it was strategy?
I'm saying that it was strategy. And I don't think, you know, I think when you look at so much death and destruction of black bodies, you say, how can we get through? And his thing was, let me hunker down. He was the one that gave home to George Washington Carver, gave him a whole suite and a lab to figure out everything he needed to figure out about the peanut, things we wouldn't know to this day if not for Booker T. Washington.
I think it's also about making sure that you play your position and that you're prepared for a time such as this. And a time such as this portion, the idea happens to everyone at some point in their life where it clicks. I'm here for this. And the thing is, some people are here for sacrifice. Some people are here to be the body that lays over the expanse so other people can walk to get to where they're going. And even Martin knew that when he said, you know, I may not make it with you, but we as a people. So sometimes it's about that, but it's all in. I'm someone that my entire life, I've always heard God, and not in some creepy way, not in the event thou shalt, not like that. Just, I felt him, I hear him, I know him. I see him in all things. I see him in billboards as I walk down the street. I receive the message that I get, and I always do what he tells me to do. And so sometimes you have to understand that if you're in line with purpose, your purpose might be the one that dies. Your purpose might be the one that never succeeds. Your purpose might be the one that never marries. Like, and we think that everybody's supposed to be rah, rah. That's not the truth of what life is. I had a friend, love the Lord, just saw in her mind she's going to be married, she's going to have kids. She saw this beautiful life for herself. She died at 40, single and unmarried. And so my thought is, because that stuff didn't happen for her, does that mean she, God didn't love her? Did that mean she missed God? No, it's so deep. It's like everybody doesn't get the list of things that society has decided we all need. And that's why even in my own singleness and childlessness, I've accepted it. Because I'm thinking, like, maybe if I'd have been a wife and mother, I'd be somewhere tending to them, rightfully so. And I wouldn't be where I need to be to say the things God needs me to say. I wouldn't be where I need to be a mouthpiece for God. If God ever chooses to yoke me up with a man, it will be because my call matches his call. And we cannot complete what God called us to complete on this earth unless we walk together. If you ever see me with a ring on this finger, it will be because I know that my purpose is linked with this man. Other than that, I will be the single chick going, listen, y'all need to listen. And I'm okay with that. I have died. You have to die to self. You have to die to self. You have to die to ambition. You have to die to your plan and figure out, what is this? What is this great mosaic that we are blessed to be a part of? I even had this revelation recently that everything is joy. Everything is beneficial. Everything is joy. Even hard times. I had a span of time a few months ago where I lost out on a job that I really wanted, and I ended a relationship a day apart. Boom, boom. And I posted on Instagram a picture of me with tears going down my face. And I didn't pay attention to the picture when I took it. I just posted it because I needed people to see that time and chance happened to us all. And I wanted people to feel that we could be together in this moment, that my pain is your pain and we can walk with each other through this. And my comment section became a great cathartic situation where everybody was sharing their war stories and people started helping each other and making it better for each other. I went back and looked at that picture recently and I'm crying. I am. There's tears in my face, but I'm kind of smiling too. And I don't remember smiling in that picture. But what the revelation that has come to me since that day is, something within me was like, I get to experience this too. I get to experience despair, the worst feeling I've ever felt. And I get to survive it. And I get to have a story that I can sit in Oceania over some sea scallops and share with people, or through a podcast and share, that ultimately leads to somebody else realizing that they can get over. So maybe even the hard times and the bad health diagnosis and no money in the bank and the job you want, not getting that job or not getting the man or the whatever you wanted, maybe there's joy in that too because of the how I got over story that you get, or the fact that your testimony blesses someone else. Because again, as an outward facing person, what we go through is never just for us. If what we go through just enriches us or helps us, we have wasted the time. We've wasted the lesson. Whatever you get should be enough to fill you and also fill a few more cups. Always. Wisdom, love, joy, food. Always. You know what I mean? So I'm crying, but I'm still smiling. That's crazy. But is it?
That's incredible. On that note, I mean, we can't get any better than that, right? thank you, Karen Hunter. Thank you, Yvette Nicole Brown. We're all going to be watching The Walking Dead as a collective.
Yes, we are.
To get those lessons. So this is Clay Kane on The Hub. I'll see y'all next week. Thank you for listening to my podcast, Clay Kane on the Hub. Go to hub.news for all information. Follow me on social media, which is Clay Kane, C-L-A-Y-C-A-N-E.